Going to start actually in the book of Job this morning. For our Sunday school lessons, what we have been doing for some time now is looking at just doing an Old Testament or a review, a very, very brief review of each of the books of the Old Testament. And once again, the reason for doing that is that part of the edification process of the believer based upon Romans 16:25 is the Scriptures of the prophets. So if we're going to be properly edified and functioning saints of the Most High God, we do need to have an appreciation for what's going on in the Old Testament. After all, you cannot and will not be able to understand what's going on in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John if you don't have at least a basic working knowledge of the Old Testament. Some of the things we've looked at already in looking at what is called the Old Testament, Genesis through Malachi, is the Old Testament is broken up into three major sections. You go Genesis through Esther, and then you're going to go Job through Song of Solomon, and then you're going to go Isaiah through Malachi. And we mentioned that the threefold breakdown of the Old Testament, at least this way, this would be a reference to the history books. Israel's history, where they came from, where they're going, and so forth. These are reference to their heart. They're called the heart books of Israel. And these, of course, are called the hope, their future, okay, the hope. And you don't want to just think about that in the sense of just an intellectual kind of concept when you think of the Old Testament. You want to understand that all the way through history, God has always had what you might refer to as a believing remnant, always. All the way through history, you can identify those that have believed God in contrast with those that have had confidence in human wisdom. And so the layout of the Old Testament is designed to provide doctrinal edification and information for those who are going to trust Him. The layout in the Old Testament, Genesis through Malachi, when you look at the index of your Bible, you look at and it goes Genesis through Malachi. That's not the order in which those books were written, right? That's not the order in which they were written. When your Old Testament goes from Genesis through Malachi, it was not placed that way in terms of the dates of their writing. It's placed that way because of doctrinal reasons, because of the doctrinal edification that is designed to produce in the believer. We're going to begin talking about the book of Job this morning. Job is a very long, detailed book. We're certainly not going to go verse by verse, chapter by chapter in this book. 42 chapters, it would just, you know, we could spend months and months just on this book. But we are going to look at Job this morning in the next few weeks and so forth so that just like we've done in relationship to the books prior to this, we've wanted to be able to say that when you think about a particular book, you know what it's about. And so too with the book of Job. So the purpose of getting into Job this morning, it follows Esther, so it's the next book in the series of what we're looking at. But whenever you think of the book of Job, you want to be able to have two or three key verses that come to mind that will tell you the purpose of the book of Job. All right? Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, the books in the Old Testament, Genesis through Malachi, in that sequence, that's not the order in which they were written. In fact, the oldest book in the Bible is not the book of Genesis. You know what it is? It's the book of Job. The book of Job is the oldest book in the Bible. And we're going to look at a couple of things about that, why that's significant, why that's important, and so forth. But Job is actually the oldest book in the Bible, but it doesn't start your Old Testament. The book of Genesis starts the Old Testament. Why would Genesis start the Old Testament if it's not the oldest book? Because it's the beginnings. It's the book. Somebody says, what's Genesis about? It's about the beginnings, right? In the beginning, and so forth. So obviously, Genesis goes at the front in terms of the doctrinal design of edification for the believer, all right? The other thing about Job, some other things interesting about Job in relationship to Genesis, is that if you were to ask some people, the average Christian, where do you find in the Bible details about creation, everybody's going to tell you the book of Genesis, right? But remember the series that we did on science falsely so-called science, and we got to true science. And we spent, I don't know how many weeks on the book of Job itself, Job 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, and so forth. And a lot of that we went verse by verse. And what we found is that there's actually more information in the book of Job about the creation than there is in the book of Genesis. There's more there. Now, it's from different perspective and so forth, but there's more information in the book of Job about creation than there is in the book of Genesis. Isn't that fascinating to think about that? There's more details in the book of Job about the actual physical creation, the purpose of creation, things like that, in the book of Job than there is in the book of Genesis. Okay? So, the reason that we're starting Job this morning is because it's next in our series of just kind of going through and identifying the purpose of each of the books in the Old Testament. All right? Now, it is significant. We completed Genesis through Esther, so we understand now their history. If you went through that section, you understand their history. You understand where Israel came from. You understand the purpose for which God created the nation of Israel. You understand the problems they've had, and you understand that there is some future out there for them. Oftentimes, people will email me with the question about, I don't really understand history. Israel, where did they come from, and so forth. So I'll email them back, and I'll say, well, if you want to understand Israel, their history, get a layout of the history, you've got to read Genesis through Esther. And that'll tell you, you can chart out Israel's history, where they came from, that type of thing. So now, once you have that down, now you're going to move to the next section, Job through Song of Solomon. Job through Song of Solomon. And that really is going to deal with the issue of Israel's heart. Here's their history. Here's where they came from and all the trouble they got in. By the way, they're going to get into a lot more trouble too. But the only way they're going to get out of that trouble is they're going to have the information in the heart books. The heart books are going to tell them that there's going to have to be a change in their heart in order for them to get out of that trouble and in order for them to get into that hope that the prophets are going to come along and tell them about. Okay, see what's going on there? All right, so keep that in mind. Let me just erase this. So now, let's begin. This is just kind of introductory to Job, the book, and Job, the man. One of the first questions that comes up, who is Job anyway? Look with me, if you would, to Genesis. Go to Genesis 46. Genesis 46. And look at Job chapter number 1, of course. Genesis 46. Okay, look at Genesis chapter number 46. Now start with me at verse 8. Genesis 46, 8 says this. And these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, the sons of Reuben, Hanok. Then verse 10, you've got the sons of Simeon. Look at verse 11. Then you've got the sons of Levi. Verse 12, you've got the sons of Judah. Verse 13, you've got the sons of Issachar. Verse 14, you've got the sons of Zebulun. 16, the sons of Gad. 17, the sons of Asher. And so, what are you being told here? You're told, yeah, exactly. You're being given each of the sons of Jacob here and their descendants up to this point when they go into Egypt, right? So look back at verse 13. So the sons of Issachar were Tola, Puva, and guess who? There he is. Job is the third son of Issachar. So what do you know about Job?
Third son of Israel.
Okay, and knowing that, what do you know about him? That's right, he's an Israelite. Okay, and he's of the tribe of Issachar. What else do you know about him? Based upon verse 8. What's that? He went down to Egypt. Look at verse 8. And these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. He's the third son of Issachar, and he was one of the nation of Israel, obviously. And he was part of the group of men, part of the 70 souls that went down into Egypt. Now, it's going to be important that you remember that when Israel first went down into Egypt, were they under satanic captivity? When they first went down there. They weren't at all. In fact, the vast majority of the year, how many years were they going to spend down there? Anybody remember that? Go back to Genesis 15 here real quick. Go back to Genesis 15. Genesis chapter 15. Look at Genesis 15. And God says to Abram here, Genesis 15, verse 13, He said unto Abram, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and they shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, and shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." How long, according to God, was Abraham's seed, the nation of Israel, that remnant, that 70 souls that went down there and, of course, multiplied and so forth? How long were they supposed to be down there? How many generations? Four generations, right? Well, when Israel initially goes down into Egypt, are they afflicted? Are they treated evilly by Pharaoh? They're not at all. Why not? Royally, because why? Because Joseph is second in command over there. So for that generation, that initial generation, things were not so bad at all. It wasn't until, you know, the generations proceeded down the line. And what you want to remember is that Job, the third son of Issachar, was part of that initial group that went down into Egypt. And initially, things were pretty well, went pretty well. If you've read the book of Job, and I'm sure you have, because by the way, if you're reading in the zone, you should be around Ecclesiastes chapter 11 right now, so you've already read the book of Job. And you understand, by reading the book of Job, that Job was a guy who was very well thought of, not only by his nation, but by the Gentiles, by the Egyptians and so forth. Job was a guy that was highly esteemed. He was definitely a ruler. He was a judge in Israel, that type of thing. And so he was a very prominent individual as far as a member of the nation of Israel goes. Now, as far as the timing of the writing of the book of Job, we've said, and it's been said, it's kind of interesting. A lot of people say Job was written late. How would you know whether or not Job was written early or late? And what do you mean by early and late? If Job was a third son of Issachar who went down into Egypt, then he had to have lived during that first generation down there, right? Now, he lived quite a number of years afterwards because of the double blessing at the end, right? But what else does that tell you timing-wise? Okay, it had to be written before Moses wrote any of his books. Which books did Moses write? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Now we say it had to be written before that. How come? What's that? Because they quote Job, which is fascinating. Job is quoted by other Old Testament writers over 60 times, the book of Job. Over 60 times. Isn't that fascinating? And the New Testament he's made reference to. James makes reference to him and so forth. But Job is quoted just many, many times by other Old Testament writers. A lot in the book of Psalms. Amazing. Quite a bit in Proverbs. And you can understand why. Why else? Why else? What kind of questions would you ask? What kind of questions would need to be asked and answered in order to determine when Job was written, say, in relationship to other books in the Old Testament? What kind of questions? What's that? Okay, who was the king? That might be a good one to ask. Okay, what's that?
Where did he live?
I didn't hear the first part.
Where did he live?
Where did he live? Okay, good. What else? Well, tell you what, look at Job chapter number 1. Now watch this. Let's see if we can get some insight to some questions that we should ask to determine when the book was written in relationship to other events in the Old Testament. Because we said he writes his book before that this... By the way, Job doesn't write the book of Job. It looks like Elihu wrote it. Okay. Anyway, but the book is written before Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Watch this. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. There were born unto him 7 sons, 3 daughters. His substance also was... This guy was very wealthy, obviously. Verse 4, his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and to drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Okay, there's some real interesting information in that section right there that identifies for us when, in relationship to some other things, the book was written, the events occurred. He's offering sacrifices. Good. What else? Why does that mean anything? What's that? Days of feasting. Why else? Because what? He say it again. He's acting like a priest, but he's not a Levite. He's a third son of Issachar. So this is prior to the Mosaic Law coming into effect. Understand that? See that? He's, what you have here is you have each of the men, the fathers of their own respective families, should be acting like this guy does, like Job does. You're not necessarily told that they are, but you can see that he fears God, he eschews evil, he's an Israelite. He's actually taking the lead here that he learned either by seeing or audibly from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because remember how they offered sacrifices for their lineage. This guy's not a Levite. And if this was under the Mosaic Law, if the events here occur after the Mosaic Law is in effect, what would be the problem? How could it say he feared God and eschewed evil if he was not a Levite and he's offering sacrifices? See that? Go ahead, you had a question or comment. Everybody got that point? That's my wife, by the way. Okay. Okay, say it loud again. No, Moses is not even born yet. See that? So her point was is that if he was the third son of Issachar in that initial group that went down to Egypt, Moses is not even born for three more generations. Moses is one of the guys related to the third and the fourth generation that's going to bring him out of Egypt. Remember that? What's that?
Moses was born when they were under captivity.
Yeah. See, when they initially go down into Egypt, they're not under satanic captivity. That initial generation is not under satanic captivity in Egypt. The captivity occurs after that. Okay? So again, it's pretty obvious here that when you read what's going on in the book of Job, and when you know who Job is, that you definitely can pinpoint it way before the Mosaic Law and before any of the books that Moses wrote. When did Moses write Genesis through Deuteronomy? Approximately, when did he write them? Before the captivity or after the captivity? After. How do you know that? Because they're out in the desert already. How do you know that? Yeah, he goes up to Mount Sinai to get the law. So you understand that when Moses is writing Genesis and so forth like that, he writes those after he's brought Israel out of Egypt. He doesn't write those in Egypt. When Moses was in Egypt, he was the second in command to Pharaoh. Right? And so forth. And he was brought up at Pharaoh's daughter's feet and so forth. He was not. And then even when he abandoned Israel and went out to the desert, he wasn't walking by faith when he goes and marries the Ethiopian woman out there. He was not walking in faith out there. He had abandoned Israel. He comes back to Egypt, brings Israel out of Egypt, and then that's when God begins to, and he's writing those books. See what's going on there? Okay, so you can follow this train of thinking, and you can see, therefore, what would be some other things in the book of Job that you'd either expect to find or expect to not find in this book relative to when it was written. Moses is not even born yet. They're not under the law, so what else are you not going to find? Some other things. Well, he is offering sacrifices. Yeah, all the stuff in the book of Leviticus, for example. You have no temple here. You've got no tabernacle. You've got no priesthood system, specifically the tribe of Levi. You don't have any of that in the book of Job, which is, again, it's a fascinating thing to think about. Yes, did you have, say that again? Yeah, you don't even have the Ten Commandments here. When was the law first given? The Ten Commandments. That's right. Exodus 20, when God gave it to Israel. Okay, Russ, go ahead.
I would say, I know that's
Say that again.
You mentioned different tribes like the Chaldeans.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah, they existed even before this. That's exactly right. You're going to watch, tell you what, watch this. Let's go to chapter number 2. Go to chapter number 2. Job, there are some key players in the book of Job. Of course, you've got Job. If you look over to chapter 2, verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all his evil that was come upon him, they came everyone from his own place. So who do you have first? You've got Eliphaz. Now who is Eliphaz? He's a what? He's from Teman. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Who's the guy you got next? You've got Bildad. Now, there are two guys in the Bible. Whenever you hear people ask the question, who's the shortest man in the Bible? What's that? I guess that would be three. Zacchaeus was a short guy. There's another guy that slept on his watch. So he was really short to be able to sleep on his watch.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got this guy. This guy is Bildad the shoe height. He's really short. Anyway, that's a joke. Okay, but that's how you can remember this guy. Okay, this guy, Bildad the shoe height, he's from Shua. Okay, he's from Shua. And those you can pretty easily identify. And then, of course, you've got Zophar. Z-O-P-H-A-R. He's a Buzite. Buzz Lightyear, right? Remember Buzz Lightyear? Right there? See that? He's, where'd we go? Zophar, the Nemethite, for they had made... He's of Neman. That's what it was. He's of Neman, okay? And you're going to find the connection with I'm sorry, that's not him. That's the other guy. That's the other guy. I'm sorry. He's from Neman. Now go with me all the way. You can hold that verse there and go with me to 34. I gave the wrong connection there. Go to 34. Look over to. Look at 32. Chapter 32. It says, then was kindled the wrath of Elihu. Okay. Now who's this guy? The son of Berachal, the what? The Buzite. There's Buzz. There's Buzz Lightyear. You remember that guy. Okay. So the reason I bring those guys up is if you look at, okay, who's Teman? Who are the Temanites? Who is Shua? This guy's a little difficult to find. But these three are easy to spot. Those three right there. And let me give you an... Because that will also tell you where approximately the book occurs. And it'll tell you, like Ross was mentioning, the lineage of some of these guys. Okay? Let's look at, for example... go with me to Genesis 36 here. And go back to Job 2. Genesis 36. Genesis 36 here, and watch this. Genesis 36 and hold Job chapter number 2. Okay, now, question. Genesis 36 gives us the generations of who? Esau. Who's Esau? Who was Esau? Okay, who does Esau become? That's exactly right. Say it loud. The Edomites. Look at verse 1, 36:1. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Look at verse 8. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Everybody get that? Look at verse 9. These are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. Look at verse 19. These are the sons of Esau, who is Edom. Okay? Look at verse 43. The last part of verse 43. He is Esau, the father of Edomites. Who are the Edomites? Where did they come from?
Esau.
Okay, now, why did God tell us five times in this chapter this? He wanted us to know it. So if you ever have any questions about the Edomites or Mount Seir, where do they trace their lineage back to? Esau. So remember who that is. When you get to the book of Obadiah and some of the prophets, and they prophesy against Mount Seir, they're prophesying against the Edomites, the descendants of Esau. Whose brother was Esau? Okay? Right? Why is that significant? Because Esau said Jacob stole the birthright. Esau was an absolute unbeliever. He didn't believe in resurrection. He said, give me that pottage else I die. He was willing to trade the birthright for a mess of pottage, which tells you he didn't believe in resurrection. He didn't believe there was any benefit to the birthright. Understand that? This guy doesn't believe God's word. You know, you say, well, Jacob was a connival. Well, that's true. But the covenant was passed on to Jacob there. So you have this long-standing battle between the descendants of these two guys. Esau, later on, actually wound up being okay with his brother when he came back and so forth. But the descendants wind up, and Esau winds up hating. Tell you what, go with me, if you would, to Malachi. Hold Genesis 36, hold Job 2, go to Malachi. Watch this. Malachi chapter 1. Malachi chapter number 1. Watch this now. Malachi chapter number 1, verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. So God through Malachi says this to Israel. He says, I have loved you, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, his Israel's stiff-necked reply back to God. Yet ye say, wherein hast thou loved us? Well, here's God's answer. Was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord, yet I loved Jacob, and I hated Esau, and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness? Whereas Edom saith, okay, who's Edom? That's Esau, that's the descendants of Esau. Whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. They shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. Wait a minute. Why would God have indignation against Esau forever? If you talk to the Calvinists, they tell you, we'll see, God before the foundation of the world chose who he would love and who he would hate and so forth. Right? That's not all what's going on here. Why did God set his indignation against Esau? Why? That's exactly why. Genesis 12. God told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, hey, whoever curses you, I'll curse him. And whoever blesses you, I'll bless him. That's why. See that? So you've got to remember who Esau is, the Edomites and so forth. So now, you can go back to Genesis 36. Relative to the book of Job, Genesis 36, and you can see at verse 1, now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. And jump ahead to Genesis 36, verse 10. It says, these are the names of Esau's sons. You've got Eliphaz, the son of Adah, the wife of Esau. You've got Raul, the son of Beshemath, the wife of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz were that guy, Teman. So Teman is a descendant of who? Esau. Teman winds up having a son that he names after his father, Eliphaz. That's who, Eliphaz is the descendants of Esau. See that there? Eliphaz, that's who he is. He's a descendant he's with the Edomites and so forth. Any questions on that one? And there's actually a lot of other references about these guys throughout the Old Testament, but this gets us back into Genesis, which helps us understand that. Now, if you would, go back to Genesis 25. Genesis 25. Genesis 25, watch this. Then again Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Now this is after the death of Sarah. Abraham marries again, and her name was Keturah. Now watch this. And she bare him Zimram, Jokshan, Medan, and Midian, Ishbak, and who? Okay, there it is. And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan, the sons of Dedan, and so forth. Verse 5, and Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. So even though he has all these additional descendants, these sons, by Keturah, he gives the inheritance to Isaac. But what you find out is that Bildad, Shua, was the descendant of Abraham by Keturah. So are they part of Israel? Because they are the descendants of Abraham. Are they part of Israel?
No.
Right, they're not. Because remember, Israel comes from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel. Right? Okay, is that confusing or are we okay here? Are we okay? All right. So what happens is that Bildad actually winds up being a descendant from Abraham through Keturah, which is not part of Israel, but was clearly part of the nations who could be blessed by blessing Israel. All right? And then Zophar, he's a little bit more difficult to identify. We're going to skip past him just for now. We're going to try to look at this guy, Buzz Lightyear. That's how you can remember him, right? Buzz Lightyear. Let's see if I can remember where to track this guy down here. Look at Genesis 22 this time. This guy is a Buzite. What a name, right? A Buzite. A boozer? Genesis 22. Look at verse 20. It came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, Behold, Milcah, she hath also borne children unto thy brother Nahor, Huz, his firstborn, and who? Buz, his brother, and Kemuel, the father of Aram, and so on. And if you trace that through, you'll find out that he had some descendants, and that's who this guy, Elihu, winds up being a descendant of that guy there. There's some land named after him and all that kind of interesting information there. Okay, so what I'm saying is that you definitely, by looking at internal information in the book itself and comparing it with other books in the Bible, specifically the early books in the Bible, Genesis, where you do get the various lineages and things like that, it's actually kind of easy to identify some of these people. In the book of Job, you have these five main characters. All right? You've got Job, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, and Elihu. But I'm missing two. I'm missing two. Yes, sir? Okay. Genesis 22, verse 20. Let me double check that. 20 and 21, I think it is. Let's just double check and see. 20 and 21 there. So in other words, Nahor has these two sons, Huz and Buz. And then when you trace that out, you can look at some other references, territories that are named after this guy. He has some descendants. That's who he comes from, the Buzite. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, as far as key players in the book of Job, you've got these guys, Job, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, and Elihu. But I'm missing two. That's exactly right. God and Satan. All right. The book of Job. The book of Job is part of the heart books. Job does not understand why he's being persecuted. These three guys come along and give their various viewpoints as to why he's being persecuted. And we're going to talk, we're out of time, so we'll talk about each of these guys next time and so forth and what this guy says. But ultimately, if you look at the book of Job, the last chapter of Job, Job 42. This verse will tell you the purpose of the book of Job. This will tell you the purpose of it. It's one of those books where you have to read all the way to the end of it to really appreciate the beginning. And it says this, Job 42, verse 10. This is the purpose of the book of Job. This book will tell you the purpose. Job 42, verse 10 says this, And the Lord turned the captivity of Job. There it is right there. Mark that. Underline it, highlight it, somehow remember that. The book of Job is Job is a picture of the nation of Israel under satanic captivity. A conflict that occurs between God and Satan. A conflict that Satan brings up by saying, "Does Job serve thee for naught?" See, Satan doesn't believe, when presenting this question to God about Job, Satan doesn't believe that a man would be willing to serve God just out of gratitude. Job is put under satanic captivity on purpose. And the purpose is that God winds up working in Job, in actually talking to Job, conveying information to Job, and saying to Job, "Job, you may not understand everything that's going on and why you're under satanic captivity. What you're going through, Job, is a lot bigger picture than your particular situation. When we went through Job 38, 39, 40, 41, remember all those questions that God asked Job? Remember those questions? He asked Job about the stars and about the earth and about clouds and about hail and about animals, lions and this and that. What does Job need to know about all this stuff for? Because God is telling Job, "Job, I have everything set up to take that guy out. I set this entire scenario up, this whole scene. I stretched out those heavens like a canvas. I garnished the heavens with the stars. I put everything in place, all these armaments and so forth. I put all that there because I'm going to take that guy out. There's a rebellion going on in my universe. And Job, you're kind of caught in the middle of that thing. And it's going to take me, Job, to turn your captivity." That's what the book's about. And Job is going to be one of the most prominent books that believing remnant out here in the tribulation period is going to have to read and learn from. They're going to have to learn that it's going to require God, and only God, to be able to turn their captivity. James says, let me just go quickly over the book of James here. James chapter 5, I think it is. Yeah, look at James chapter 5. James chapter 5. Who is James? Who does James say he's writing to? 12 tribes scattered abroad. James is not writing to you. The book of James is not to you. It's not about you. That whole debate about faith plus works, it isn't relative to you at all, period. You are not the 12 tribes scattered abroad. You are not the nation of Israel. You're not even spiritual Jews. You're the members of the body of Christ. You're what God's doing in this dispensation, the dispensation of grace, right? Well, James says to his audience, James 5, verse 11, James 5:11. Watch what he says here. "Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the," what? "Patience of Job." Well, then they've read the book. They're going to read the book out there in the tribulation period. They're going to read the book of Job. That is the believing remnant. But not only have they heard of the patience of the Lord, they've what? I'm sorry, the patience of Job. They've seen the end of the Lord. The book of Job tells them both issues. It tells them about Job's patience, but it tells you the, quote unquote, end of the Lord. That is, that it's going to take the Lord to turn Job's captivity. It's going to take the Lord to turn the captivity of that believing remnant in that tribulation period and bring them into the kingdom. See that? That's the purpose of the book of Job. We'll talk more about that next time. We're out of time here. Any questions or comments or anything on that? All right. Well, let's we'll take a break. We'll start again in about 10.